Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk Podcast. I'm Pat Boyle from NBC Sports Chicago. Mike Tsai with a couple of Stanley Cup champions, Jamal Mayers and Adam Birch. What's up, boys?
What's up, PB?
Doing well.
Yeah, and so are the Hawks, yeah. Playing their best hockey of the year, 5-1-1 in their last seven. We've seen scoring now from all four lines, including the third line the other night against the Ducks. And what's been the difference as you look at this scoring that we've seen here over the last couple of weeks? And I will say one thing for sure, good starts in first periods, which hasn't always been something we've seen from this team.
Well, a lot of times in years past, we've talked about manufacturing urgency. And at this point, there's no need to manufacture it. It's real. All you have to do is look at the standings and realize that they needed to get on a roll and they needed to start playing with more urgency and find a way to play fast. And for me, it starts in the defensive zone. As a collective group, all five guys working harder on the puck to get out as quickly as they can. They've really solidified the pairings on the back end. All six guys are playing, and there's some consistency there, some predictability in how they want to play. And it's about playing fast and possessing the puck. And then they're able to create chances and involve the defense in the offensive zone and sustain pressure. But for me, it's the defensive side of play leads to offense, and because of that, they've been scoring some goals.
Yeah, and for me, it's just a confidence thing. And as a player, Jammer, you know that you may have four or five bad games, and the next game you score a goal, and then you show up to practice, and you feel like you're Wayne Gretzky out there the next day just by scoring one goal. And I kind of think back to that New Jersey Devils game. What was the final? 7-5?
Right.
They lost the game.
They had a 4-1 lead, let it slip away.
Right, and so that was bad, but they were having trouble scoring, but they got five goals that night.
Right.
So now you got some guys that maybe had a little bit of confidence. I don't want to say you don't care that you lose the game because you care, but some nights you haven't been scoring in 5, 6, 7 games and you get a point or you get a goal. Now that can lead into the next game. And since then, they've been able to find ways to put games together where they're scoring 3+ goals, because as we know now in this league, you have to score at least 3 goals a night if you want to win. So for me, it's just getting that confidence. And then tonight, now you got, two nights ago, it was Taves getting 3 points. So he's kind of off the schneid. Now he's got some confidence. Tonight, you get Sharp with a goal and assist, a guy that's been snake bit a little bit. It's confidence, and they're just building now. So you get Caves going, you get Sharp going, and then Schmaltz and DeBrincat, obviously, who are just going to be two young studs. So you kind of throw that all in the pot together, and you're going to be a tough team to beat.
DeBrincat with his first career hat trick on Monday night. He's now up to 10 goals on the season. His little run here started with 2 empty netters that Johnny set him up on, and it's funny how this game works out and what ignites you. But when you look at what DeBrincat has been able to do, and we talk about his skill set, and I think we all agree that at some point he's going to be in a top 6 role. It was just nice to see him be an igniter on that third line with Hartman and with Sharp on Monday night against the Ducks.
Yeah, and for me, again, it starts in the defensive side of the puck. And Joel, if he didn't have confidence in this youngster and his ability to recognize and play defense, he wouldn't be out there in the last minute of hockey games to get those empty net goals to propel him into the offensive side of the game. So he's such a cerebral player. He has great timing. He's not big. He's not fast. His shot's pretty good, but it's accurate. But he's smart. He finds a way to get to the area at the right time to lose and find those soft areas to shoot the puck. He knows when to pass it. He knows when to dish it. He knows when he needs to one-time it. His play recognition is off the charts. His hockey IQ he's so smart.
Like his second goal tonight, it made it look real easy, the rebound on there. But it's like tight quarters, man on him. And he, like we always say, the puck finds him.
Yeah.
But that is because he's in the right spot, right?
Yeah, well, Jammer said it when we were doing the game. He could have gone underneath the defenseman and just went right to the net. Instead, he chose a route that went above the defenseman, more high in the slot, which is where these rebounds are going to kick out. Goaltenders now, they kick these rebounds out higher. He went to that area. How did he know it was going to go there? I don't know. Good players do. They just know how to find a jammer. And he went to that area. The other thing that was interesting is what Sharp said after the game. He talked about Hartman as the center iceman in that position. And Hartman, he's a heck of a player, and I know any team in the league would want to have a guy like him. He can play with skill. He can play gritty. He can fight. He can hit. But for me, he's probably not a natural centerman.
I think he's
a winger. Tonight, he looked like a natural centerman. Sharp said he was carrying the puck with speed and with confidence and creating plays. When you've got a centerman that can kind of lag the puck up the ice and control it, well, now your wingers just got to kind of get open. They got to find space. And Hartman did a great job with that, which gave space to Sharp, and it gave space to DeBrincat.
As we look at the rest of this team and what has transpired here in the last couple of weeks, special teams has played an important role. And we talked about it the other night, certainly with the ugly, you know, slashing call in Tampa that led to the game winner. It puts an even bigger emphasis on your special teams units. And you look at Monday night, you know, they go 2-for-3 on the man advantage. This is something that, you know, we saw a lull, but I think now – I think coming into this game, they had scored on 5 of the last 18. So, you know, that's, 7 of their last 21. So they're finally getting something going there. What has the difference been from your guys' perspective on the production on the power play in recent weeks?
Well, a couple things. They changed the units, and to me they went to more of a shooting power play when you have Franson at the top and you've got the youngsters shooting as well, Forsling, and they've given them green light to shoot pucks. And everything for me starts with the getting pucks to the middle, shooting them, and then let the skill to hang. And certainly Burr knows this as being a penalty killer. If you just want to hang out on the side and, you know, stick handle on the half wall, I'll leave you over there. I'm not afraid of you. Next thing you know, if you do a quick give and go down low, try to create an attack, and then next thing you know, I've got to respect that. Now you can backhand it to the top of the box, and you can shoot from the middle of the ice. Now I've got lots of things I've got to think about, never mind the seam passes. But if you're going to be content and staying on the outside, I'll leave you out there all day long. And they're making the penalty killers work by having a shooting mentality, and then for me, their skill can take over.
Yeah, I mean, and Pat, you and I have talked about it on TV, but I hate these stupid slashing calls. I think it's silly. I think it doesn't provide anything other than wanting to add offense on the power play, but it doesn't take away any scoring chances. I'd like to see more, and Jammer and I talked about it during the game, was more interference calls. If I'm told I got to get to the net and we're beating on all these players, we've got to get to the net, you got to get to the net, well, defensemen are told to block their guy out. Well, the heck, that's interference, and that takes away a scoring chance, so why not call those if you want to call something? But for me, the Blackhawks, the power play, I still think it can get better. I think there's another level there. But I think when you have that many good players on the ice at once, they're going to score goals, and I kind of think that's where they're at right now. A lot of their goals sometimes have just been ad-libbing, or like Jammer said, just letting Cody pound it. But Cody's also been a bright spot. I mean, he's been able to pass and shoot, I think, which surprised a lot of people.
I think that's a big point here, is the getting shots through from the point that had been a problem prior to this run that they're on. Franzen's one of the big reasons why. We've seen Forsling and Ruta at times also being able to. It's not always that big, heavy shot, which is something you guys always told me. You know, Joel preaches, you got to blast the slap shot from the point. He doesn't want to see wristers. He doesn't want to see half slappers. I've seen them come away maybe a little bit. I don't know if that's by design, but it's like, comes off the boards. If it's a half slapper, if it's a wrist shot that's needed, so be it. Just get it on net, get it past the PK.
It depends what kind of penalty killers you're dealing with, because a lot of times, you know, killing penalties, your penalty killers are told, the defensemen anyway, to block all wristers. So any shots the wrister, the defensemen are expected to come out and step out and let that puck hit them in the chest, hit them wherever they have to. You're not expected to block one-timers, certainly, and I think Chalmerson was on his own planet in that regard.
Yeah.
But certainly you are expected to block those wristers, and I think that's where Joel's coming from. But there's a lot of merit in what you're saying, is that if you can get that quick, hard wrist shot to the net quick enough, and get it there without getting blocked in the first place, then use whatever you have to get it there. And I think Joel recognizes there's been a little bit of a transition there in the way teams are defending, particularly fronting shots, and probably the quicker shot might be the better option.
Yeah, no punch shots. That's what he used to say. Frickin' slap it. That's how he'd say it. And you know what? Just to defend Q on that a little bit, when I went to different teams and that wasn't a rule, I saw more shots getting blocked. And then you start to think about it. And what Jammer said is defensemen are taught to front people.
Right.
So that means step in front of the offensive player that's in front of you. And if you know a little wrister's coming, it's pretty easy to be brave as a defenseman and swallow that one up. If you pound a puck, now that defenseman may shiver a little bit. He may want to get out of the way, number one. Number two, if you slap it really hard, you don't know where those rebounds are going. If it's a soft wrister, I can glove it, I can throw it down, and I can ice it, I can step in front of it, catch it in the stomach. And number three, you don't know where the rebound's going. If it does get blocked off a guy's shin pad, now the offensive team is more likely to get it because as a defenseman, you don't practice how to defend, you know, blocked shots or where they're going to go. So that's why Quinville does it. And after I played on different teams, I thought it made a lot of sense. And I agree with you, Jammer, though, that I just think Q's kind of realizing, well, I got a lot of guys that don't understand this or haven't figured it out yet, so let's just worry about getting pucks on net. And as the year goes on, we'll start, you know, moving that into our game where they really got to pound it.
As we taped this podcast, it was the Hawks taking care of business 7-3 against the Anaheim Ducks on Monday night. Right back at it on Tuesday in Nashville. That'll be the third time they've played. Each team's won one of the contests. 2-1 has been the final in both. This is a challenging week, guys. If you know, 5 in 7 days, and it's against Western Conference foes. So it's almost like a 4-point night tomorrow night. When you're looking at where they sit right now, the Hawks have 27 points. They own the top wild card spot. They are 4 points back of Nashville. So. These are big. These are 4-point nights because you're mm-hmm. the opportunity, if it doesn't go to overtime, to grab two and prevent them from getting two. And in this highly competitive Western Conference, you got to make the most of these types of games.
And it is. It's a challenging part of the schedule. They knew it was coming. Obviously, this is something that they know where they are in the standings, and they certainly recognize it. Every time you walk in that dress room before practice, you see what the standings are. You know exactly where you are. You know who you're facing and what the schedule has. But as Burr knows, you live day by day as a player. And certainly right now, it's about rest and recovery. It's about preparation mentally, about what you have to do to get your body ready. Already thinking about how you're going to have to manage the puck against a fast team, a real deep team, a team that's really loaded on the back end in the Nashville Predators. That really enjoys and relishes playing at home. Not going to be an easy task. Certainly you'll have enough fans there to support you, but they're going to have to manage the puck extremely well against a team that will counter, will come after you with everything they have, and it's already asleep right now waiting for you.
Yeah, and the other thing is back-to-back games is, Jammer, you know that means maybe one beer on the flight in Nashville on a back-to-back game. You got to just have a bite to eat and maybe a glass of wine if you're
not
lucky.
Not a consummate professional.
Just keep
well,
it
I was playing
the
7 minutes a night, but I could have two or three.
But, I mean, this Nashville team, it's a team I think the Blackhawks are going to have to be chasing all year. And like you guys mentioned, it's a tough matchup for the Blackhawks, if you just want to be honest. They don't play so well against teams that trap, that lock up the neutral zone. They like to freewheel. They like to trade chances. They're okay trading chances. They trust Corey. So it just presents a tough matchup. We've talked about at PB about how they match up maybe better against Eastern teams, which is a little more open. The game against the Ducks, it was a wide open game, so those guys could really freewheel and move up the ice. And so, you, like Jammer said, you got to find a way to be responsible with the puck, and if you got to punt, punt.
And they're fast. They're going to get on you. A lot of the Hawks, you know, what they like to do, they like to go D to D and use the middle of the ice to get out of the zone. They're not going to wait. They skate so well, they can send two forwards to each D and have a third guy high. So the middle's not open. The boards are locked off. They got defense that are active and right in your back pocket as a winger. They force you to punt. They're going to force the Blackhawks to chase down pucks, particularly early on in periods and early on in the game, especially when Joel's not going to get the matchup that he would prefer.
Sure.
So I know the answer to this, but I'm going to still ask the question to you guys. When you're taking on a fast team like this, and you've played on Monday night, I know you win 7-3, so Joel almost never makes a lineup change. But should he consider being proactive and look at maybe a defenseman who's a little older, what have you, or a forward, and try to inject some youth in the lineup, Tanner Kara, whoever, even though you're coming off a convincing win, because you're hoping that you know you don't have tired legs Tuesday night in Nashville. I'm nuts, right?
I don't think you're nuts. I think Joel, they're smart. He's taking notes. He's writing down. He's certainly aware, and he's going to be able to look back at a chart what grade a player got based on their age and who it was. And he's given the veteran player benefit of the doubt today in November. But I can tell you this: when we're in January, February, March, maybe the decision's a little bit different. But I can assure you he's going to have that scorecard, and he's going to recognize, I gave this guy the benefit of the doubt on this night. It didn't quite work out in Nashville. I'll never make that mistake again.
Yeah, and I think what you mean, Jammers, he's going to look back at these back-to-back games and see how that played out for certain players. I don't think you can make any changes after that game. It's just, like we talked about earlier, it's confidence. And you look at the guys that produced and the guys that scored, they're going to be feeling pretty good on that flight to Nashville. And so they're going to be going into this game in Nashville with some confidence. I don't think you make any changes. And I'm sure we can talk about Corey Crawford. Maybe that's the one change you could make.
Yeah, that would make sense, right? Anton Forsberg, it's a back-to-back situation. And, you know, I would say probably Corey didn't have his strongest outing. So maybe a night off, giving Forsberg a chance. Although, like, if I pulled back and looked at it, I would have said Forsberg probably goes against the team like the Ducks, yep, who is struggling a little bit more, and that they would have saved Corey for Nashville. But then again, that's why I'm wearing makeup and a suit, and I don't.
Honestly, because I didn't think he got really tested, yeah, he would want that goal, you know, a couple of those goals back. He wasn't mentally into that game after it got ahead of them. And to me, I think Joel goes back to him. It wasn't a heavy load.
He'll ride him tomorrow night?
I think he rides him tomorrow night. I think it's because I'll tell you this. If I'm in the Nashville dressing room and it's in the room and they put Forsberg in, you know what I'm saying to my team before the game? I'm saying, they don't respect us. Okay. Can you believe they're going to play this kid? Let's shove it down their throat.
Yeah,
that's exactly what I would be saying.
No, that's a good point.
They should have some respect and play their starter.
That's a good point.
And so I think Joel recognized that gamesmanship, and because of the workload, I would be shocked if he doesn't go back to
Corey. Yeah, I hear what you're saying too, PB. I think when I get through this, it may sound a little bit goofy, but I think they play Corey Crawford against the Ducks because it's a game you probably think you're going to win, but you have to win it.
Right.
You need points.
Right.
So let's play all our guns. Let's not mess
start
around.
Start of a big week.
Exactly.
We don't want to start off in a negative
spot. Like in baseball, you got a 7-game series. You're going to throw your ace out there right away. Heck yeah, we are. We need to win this first game. So I think they had to win this one. And if you were going to pick a game not to play Corey, maybe it could be tomorrow night, because let's be honest, and not to discredit the Hawks, the Nashville, it's a great team. It's a coin flip who's going to win that game tomorrow, right? And maybe then it's a home ice advantage for Nashville coming off back-to-back. So you call it a 60-40 Nashville advantage tomorrow night. So maybe you just say, well, let's rest our big horse in Corey Crawford. Let's let Forsberg get in there, and maybe he can steal one. Maybe the guys will rally around him. They're tired. They know we got a backup in there. Let's see if we can get some energy that way. Maybe that's how they could justify playing him. But again, like we said, you're going to have to beat this Predator team at some point, and points are valuable. But again, I think that you play against a lower ranked team like the Ducks, you couldn't mess around with this one. You had to get these points, then you evaluate.
And okay, obviously we mentioned a huge week. You look at the situation, Dallas, a home and home situation with them. They've been a surprise. Have you been surprised a little bit with how they've played so far this year? Right now they are just 2 points back of the Hawks.
Well, we all knew they started poorly. And that was to be expected. There was going to be a lot of change with Hitchcock coming in there and changing the style of play. They played a freewheeling type of game, and you knew that Hitch was going to come in there and change some things up and make them play with more structure and more defensively. They made a few changes on the back end, and you knew they were going to get better. Still not afraid of them. No. Still don't think they're a team that's going to do any damage in the playoffs, regardless of what they do in the regular season. You would know a lot better than me, Burr, having been in that locker room, but I just don't have that confidence and belief in the sum of their group.
No, I don't think this Dallas team, and I played with a lot of guys there. I think Jamie Benn is one of the most underrated centers in the NHL. I think he's an absolute stud. But I got no problem saying it. I think Hitchcock is an awful fit in Dallas. I think I wouldn't be surprised if by come towards the end of the season, the last month or two, that they start quitting on him. I mean, he's a guy that can really, to be really honest, he can wear players out. I mean, and you saw it in St. Louis. You saw it in Columbus when he was there. He's just hard, kind of angry, a little bit sarcastic when he's on the bench. Like, ah, nice play, PB. Just keep turning the pucks over today. Way to go,
PB. And a little bit of a whiny tone to it.
You know, and that you got some, you know, big strapping men like Jammer and I on the bench, and we're not going to take it from this kind of whiny guy behind us. And that's the truth, and it's happened places, and I know a lot of the guys in Dallas, and that they go on a losing streak, and that kind of builds up for them. I could see that going south fast. They've had a decent start to the season, and they've got, you know, Seguin and Jamie Benn are two superstars in the league. Again, that's not a team that I think should scare the Blackhawks, as long as they take care of the games and play the way that they should. If they play like they did tonight, they could do the same thing to Dallas they did to Anaheim.
Also, well-placed sources have told me that Ken Hitchcock walking into a dressing room for a morning skate in shorts is not exactly the way you want to start your day. I'm not going to say who I heard that from, but
it looks like a tube top he's wearing after.
Oh, jeez.
But anyways, I digress. Captain Kangaroo and Dallas will be taking on the Hawks later this week. On a serious note, and I didn't bring this up on postgame, and I'm mad at myself, but it was a special night. Hockey Fights Cancer here at the United Center. You guys, as members of the Blackhawks and in roles now post-hockey career, make trips and visits to Lurie's Children's Hospital. You see pediatric cancer. What hanging around a Blackhawks player, meeting a Duncan Keith at morning skate, getting a picture here or there, what it means to these people. I've heard firsthand from friends whose kids have gone through a cancer, literally pointing to, he goes, that's where we met Kane, that's where we met Keith. And these kids remember it for the rest of their lives. On Monday night, we had that as the backdrop, but we also had Eddie Olczyk out there. And, Kane mentioned it during the broadcast the other night, on Wednesday night, yep, just what it meant to see Edzo on the road trip, knowing with what he's going through. I wonder if part of that great start on Monday night was something about the emotion that they had following seeing a guy get chemotherapy and come out on that ice and not nearly 100%, and take part in this ceremony, and then they went out and tried to lay some things on the line in honor of Eddie.
Yeah, and knowing the guys in that room as well as, Burr does as well, there's no question that's going to pull on your heartstrings. And Eddie means so much to this community and organization that, knowing what he's going through and the battle that he's in and the strength that he's showing and the vulnerability that he's shown as well, I think is important. That to me is a strength of his that shouldn't get overlooked. So it was a special night and amazing for him. I think he's halfway home. His treatment. So, and I mentioned it in the broadcast. I think that he's getting a chance to hear about how much he's meant to so many people over the years. And that's one positive that I do see out of it is that he's hearing it from people now, how much he's meant.
Yeah, I like what you said, Jabber, about he's showing vulnerability. And PB, he came and sat with us and did the game Saturday night in the studio. And, how easy would it be for him just to sit at home, feel sorry for himself, yeah, be miserable, be uncomfortable. But instead he wants to get out there and work. He said to us, this is like my therapy. Yeah. You know, him coming in and calling hockey games, because this is his life. This is what he loves more than anything. And rather than just sitting at home and kind of melting away and feeling sad, he's out there showing vulnerability. He's crying on TV doing interviews. He's coming to games. He's in the booth working some games. He's coming to the studio during games. It's brave. It's tough. You know, you and I, PB, on Saturday, he told us just how awful he feels after going through these chemo things. And then he's going to come, what, 4 or 5 hours after doing chemotherapy on Monday night and dropping the puck and waving to people and talking to people. It's a pretty courageous guy. And just when you think, when you know him, when he was healthy, how great he was, I mean, geez, he's certainly shown all us that there was a lot more to him than we all thought there was.
Just for all of you Blackhawks fans out there, the Hawks all wore Hockey Fights Cancer purple jerseys in warm-up. They're all going to be autographed by the individual player that wore it, and it's going to be available via auction at ChicagoBlackhawks.com between now and December 11th. So check that out. Actually, the ties that Jammer and Adam wore and all the broadcasters wore on Monday night, those will also be signed and available online as well. So check it out, ChicagoBlackhawks.com. Pick up an auction item. Obviously, goes for a great cause. We're going to close on a very important stat that our crack statistician came through, Adam Burrish, that is in jeopardy maybe this year. And it's something you unearth and lay it on to the people in podcast land.
Yeah, I need people to know this one because I don't have a whole lot of records, but you have DeBrincat and you have Hayden. Two American-born rookies for the Blackhawks. They have combined 25 points so far this year.
Okay.
So who has the most points by two American-born rookies in the Blackhawks' history? Well, the number's 80 points by two combined American-born players, and it's myself, Adam Burrish, and Patrick Kane that hold that record. Patrick Kane had 72 points his rookie year, and you guys can do the math. That means I had eight.
Eight.
But I got the record.
An important eight. I think that record's going to be all right. I mean, we're past the quarter pole, and they're at 25.
I think they end up with 60 total.
Okay.
Yes. God, I don't want to cheer against these guys.
We'll see Burrish start sweating it out like in March. And they start. We'll have a countdown meter on the post-game show.
No.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Hawks Talk Podcast. Great job, as always, boys. Hawks taking on Nashville Tuesday night. That is on NBCSN. And then NBC Sports Chicago will have, like, the next four games. Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. Just flip us on and flip us off. Do whatever you want to do. But thanks for listening to the Hawks Talk Podcast. For Jamal Mayers, Adam Burrish, I'm Pat Boyle. Thanks for listening, and go Hawks.